So how do you even begin to have these conversations? What do you ask and how? Psychologist Lonnie Leary has sat with hundreds of dying patients and their families. Her book is called No One Has to Die Alone. And she told Steve Paulson that she learned early on the cost of not talking about death.
When I was 13 years old, my mother had an illness for quite some time. And in my family, no one talked about her illness. It felt as though the rug was pulled out from under us. She was there one day and gone the next, taken to the hospital. And I was not able to see her in the hospital. I wasn't able to say goodbye. And she was dead 2 days later. And my father did the best job that he could. But there was no information as to how she died, why she died. So in the absence of information, I filled in the blanks.
What did you think happened?
Well, I was a typical 13-year-old trying, you know, to find my own independence in my own way. And so probably a week before she died, I clearly remember. I can close my eyes and still see it and feel it. She was at the kitchen sink, and I was passing through the kitchen. She turned around, and she said to me, "Lonnie, I love you so much." And I just kind of rolled my eyes, you know, as a 13-year-old would, and just kept walking. And a week later, when she died, in my mind, I made up a story that she didn't fight to live because she didn't think that her own daughter loved her. And I lived with that guilt and regret and remorse on top of the grief for years and years and years. And she died in the hospital, and no one told me how she died. And
so she had died. I mean, your father came home, your other relatives came home to tell you this shattering news. They didn't explain what happened?
No, they didn't. No. I believe that they thought they were trying to protect a child. I know they meant well, but it wasn't helpful. I also believed that my mother died alone on the operating table. And it was 15 years later that my father made some mention of being with her as her eyes rolled back in her head and her heart stopped. And my reaction was anger. I said to him, "Do you understand that for all these years, I had this horrible image of my mother dying alone?"
So if you could rewind the clock and do it differently, how do you wish your mother's death had been handled?
Oh, well, I wish that after my mother had been taken to the hospital that I was taken in to be at my mother's bedside, whether she was conscious or not, so that I could have told her I loved her or I could have said goodbye. I wish that they had given me information about the illness she had and that it was expected that she would die, so that I had time to get used to that fact. And I wish that I had been there holding her hand. And then after she died, I wish that people had asked me questions. What are you thinking? What do you believe? What are you feeling? And just had really been a presence through my grief. But I felt very, very alone.
Well, and then it's striking, of course, that you since have devoted your whole life basically to working with people who are dying. I mean, both those who are actively dying and also those who have been left behind, who are grieving. I mean, that's what you've devoted your career to.
And hence the title of my book, that we don't have to be alone. We don't have to be alone in our dying, and we don't have to be alone in our grief. And when we're not, it makes a difference.
Well, then I know you were very involved years later when your father died. I mean, as he was approaching death, you and he talked a lot about it.
Yes, I really spent the rest of my life learning everything that I could about death and dying and grief. And I vowed, no matter where I was, that I would drop everything if my father became ill. And it happened exactly that way. I was living and working in Virginia, and my father was in Hawaii. And I got a call from him saying that it wasn't pneumonia that he thought he had. In fact, it was late stage lung cancer. And so I closed my practice and I closed my university class and I flew home to be his primary caregiver. And we began talking about everything. I laid it on the table and I asked him very direct questions such as, where do you want to be? Who do you want to be with you? And let's make a bucket list. We don't know how much time you have left, but Let's make this quality time. Let's make this the best time of your life. Let's make it intimate. Let's make it rich. Let's make it authentic.
Were those hard conversations to have?
Not for me, they weren't.
What about for your dad?
No, actually, you know, and my experience with people at the end of life is that they are so hungry for someone to start the conversation. They want to talk about it, but most of them feel alone with the reality of what's really going on. In other words, there's a big elephant in the room and everyone is walking around it.
So the lesson here is communication. Mm-hmm. We have to have the conversation that probably many of us are more scared of than any other kind of conversation we can have. And you're saying it's not just talking with people who are getting ready to die. You're saying we got to talk to our children about it too.
I have been talking to my daughter since the time she was 5 years old.
When she was five?
Well, I'm just interested in the subject.
And what do you think your daughter took away from those conversations?
Ease, so that even now later, she's a 32-year-old woman in a very dangerous job on the ocean.
What does she do?
She's an officer in the Coast Guard, and she is the commanding officer of a ship. She's out there on the high seas. And so I asked her one day, if you could have your perfect death, and we know we're all going to die, what would it be? And she said to me without, you know, hesitation, oh, I'd prefer to drown.
Wow.
And so as a mother of a woman who spends probably at least 50% of her life on the ocean, can you imagine as a mother how my grief will be different if she were to drown?
Yeah.
And so that's a gift. I asked the question, we had a conversation, and she gave me the gift of her values, you see. I know more about her, you know. And as we have conversations at the end about the end of life, our values do come out.
Let's talk about, let's say, adults who feel like they need to have this conversation with their aging parents. What if their parents don't want to talk about death?
Actually, that comes up a lot in my hospice work. It may not be that they don't want to have it. It may be that they don't know how to have it. So I begin with myself. And I'll say, Mom, you know, the other day, my 60-year-old friend died suddenly, and it occurred to me that I had never told my husband how I wanted to be buried or what I cared about. So I've started having this conversation with my husband, and I want you to know that I want to be cremated, and I want my ashes to be spread out in the water, and I want just a small private memorial service. And this is what I hope you remember. So again, I'm just talking about myself and I'm modeling that conversation. And by the way, we don't have just one conversation. We go back to it little pieces, little pieces, little pieces. But at the end of this conversation, then I might say to this mother, you know, I don't think I know what you really care about. And I want to follow your wishes, but I don't want to guess. And I wonder if, as a gift to me, you would tell me what you care about most.
This is really about developing your relationship. In other words, it's not just helping her talk about how she's going to deal with death later on. I mean, you might change in the process as well.
We all win. So that at the end of when my father did die, because we had these conversations, my grief was so different than the grief I felt after my mother's death. What I said to myself after my father's death was, I gave him what he wanted. Not only did I give him the death that he wanted, I gave him the life that he wanted right up to the moment of his death. And I did not have the regret. I did not have the remorse. Of course, I had grief. I missed him. I still miss him. But I feel full. I feel grateful. I feel as though the experience was as much for me as it was for him. So everybody wins when we have these conversations.
Yeah. Now, there's another kind of conversation as well, and that's with people who are dying, I mean, who are in their final days. And you've talked with thousands, literally thousands of people, and you've been at the bedside hundreds of times at the moment of death. I mean, you worked in hospice and other places.
Yes.
What are those conversations like?
Rich. They're very rich. They're not superficial conversations. They really get down to pretty much the five things that people need to say at the end of life, which is thank you and I love you. And at the end of life, also, people have conversations with deceased loved ones who they report are in the room with them. And one of the things that I try to do with families is to encourage them to validate that experience. And I can hear the dying person sigh as though, someone believes me. And it's not uncommon that soon afterward they do let go and die.
So these are common, and these kinds of
very common
visions.
Yeah, pre-death visions are very, very common. And my response to a person who says, you know, Johnny's in the room, Johnny's here. And I might say, and who's Johnny? And the woman says, oh, my husband. My response is, well, of course he's here. Where else would he be? Whereas other people might say, hush, hush, it's just the medication, you're hallucinating. Why would we take that comfort away from someone?
What do you think for people who are dying? What are their biggest fears? What are their biggest worries, do you think?
In my experience, most people are ready to let go, but they're concerned as to whether their loved ones are going to be okay. And so as family members, one of the things that I coach is to be specific and to let them know, Dad, this is what I'm going to remember of you. You have a legacy. You'll always be in my heart.
And I would think that would be so important. I mean, you know, the person who's dying wants to know that their life has had meaning.
Their life had meaning, yep, and they will not be forgotten.
Yeah.
And they will not be forgotten, yes.
Well, Lonnie, this has been a gift to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Lonnie Leary talking with Steve Paulson. She's a psychotherapist and the author of No One Has to Die Alone.